I'm Ari Lynette, and today's episode is going to be a heavy one. This week, I'll be trying my best to get into a topic that absolutely nobody has been talking about over this past year, not even a whisper. The most niche and untouched topic I've ever covered on this podcast. Something you'd never, ever expect to pop up in 2020 of all years. Oh, who am I kidding? We're talking about the pandemic. That wasn't a very subtle intro, clearly. But today's episode is all about how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected me and how I feel about some other people's responses and activities surrounding it. It's almost a miracle that it's taken me this long to really talk properly about COVID, not even just making a whole episode about it. Like, I've really gone through 11 episodes of this podcast, and it's only at episode 12 where I decide, oh, maybe I ought to talk about the Rona. Which is pretty impressive considering how permeating this pandemic has been across so many aspects of people's lives. And I realized, even during the conception of this episode, that people might not enjoy having to sit through someone talking about that one thing everyone else is talking about, especially if it has had such a massive impact on them particularly. That's something I completely understand, and I've seen different pieces of media throughout this year and throughout upcoming times through 2021 that are finding different ways to deal with this. And there are two different approaches I'm seeing. Some pieces of media are incorporating the pandemic into their stories, and they're bringing that into the forefront, whereas others have used safer production methods to provide stories that don't address the pandemic, instead giving viewers a taste of the fantasy of a world where COVID isn't happening, at least not then. I think both of those viewpoints are valid, and as long as behind the scenes we're still prioritizing social distancing and masks and, you know, giving a shit about other people's health behind the cameras in these productions, then the media that people consume can be either or. And in a way, this podcast is both a production and a piece of media, as low-key and as irrelevant as it might be. And so far, I've given you 11 episodes worth of fantasy, so I feel like now is a good time to maybe take a step back into the real world. If you do feel uncomfortable with listening to this kind of episode, I do understand, and I certainly don't hold it against you. This time has been really tough on everyone, but not equally on everyone. I haven't caught COVID as of time of recording, neither has any of my family members. Truth be told, I don't think I even know someone personally who has caught it, other than people I've been watching online. I'm not a key worker, I haven't had to deal with a lot of the grueling stuff that so many people have had to deal with worldwide. And I want to emphasize that my position is definitely one of privilege. What I'm talking about today is simply my observations over the past year and my opinions on the way things have been handled. And I haven't observed some of the worst things that have happened this year. My heart goes out to all of those people who have been through the ringer this year. The key workers, the NHS, postal workers, teachers, retail workers, so many others. They have been integral to keeping this country running. And that goes for workers all around the world. This is a global pandemic. And I don't just want to focus on my country's efforts, though a lot of the time that's what I'll be referencing, is that's what I know best. My final thing for this intro is something of a message against misinformation. It could help if I pronounce that right. That would be a helpful tip against misinformation, pronouncing words right. First of all, we are still in this pandemic, and COVID is still a thing that is still dangerous, and that's been proven. In this house, and by that I mean this podcast, we wash our hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, and we don't forget the thumbs. We keep our distance with people, 2 meters preferably, and we wear our masks over our noses and mouths, and we don't have them made out of mesh, Lana. Sorry. The NHS and the CDC know what they are doing with these guidelines. They're there to keep people safe, and if you give a shit about other people and protecting their health as well as your own, you just shut up and do the damn thing. It's as simple as that. In short, I'm writing this episode and recording it using the facts and making sure that I am citing the right sources, and most importantly, not validating some of the absolute horseshit I've been seeing online. Coronavirus is not caused by 5G towers, the disease is not a hoax, and the government aren't going to put a tracking chip in the vaccines. End of story. I do not want to hear BS conspiracy theories and anti-vax nonsense concerning a virus that has so far claimed over 1 million lives. So let that be the final disclaimer. We listen to science, we follow guidelines, and we don't talk shite. All right, now that I've weeded out the rabble, let's cast our minds back to the opening strings of this whole thing. There are conflicting sources regarding the first cases of COVID-19, but from what I've seen, most of them settle within the ballpark of November to early December of 2019. There have been claims of earlier cases from a few different countries, but from what I can see, it's probably best to take these claims with caution, as there's just not enough evidence to prove them. There's also no real evidence of where the virus originated, but the virus was first identified in the city of Wuhan, which is capital of China's Hubei province. This spread to many of the other Chinese provinces in January of 2020, and by the end of the month, it had also spread to 26 other countries or territories. Japan on the 16th, the US on the 20th, Australia and Canada on the 25th, and India on the 30th, just to name a few. As for my home country, the UK had its first confirmed case on January 31st. And just the day before, on the 30th, the World Health Organization declared the outbreak as a public health emergency of international concern. They later recognized it as a pandemic on the 11th of March. Just to clarify, the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic is predominantly scale-based. A pandemic is global, or at least crosses over multiple international borders, whereas an epidemic tends to concern a community, region, or population, so it's more of a within-the-country thing. But by this time, it was very clear that this wasn't just a flash in the pan, and it would take more than just carrying around some tissues to solve it. It seems very strange looking back on how I first looked at COVID, but I honestly thought, like, at first it wasn't going to be very much. I kind of just assumed it was going to be a bit like the swine flu from 2009, and it wouldn't really have very much impact. It would just kind of blow over. But lo and behold, I was very wrong about that. What's good is that something I pride myself on is my listening skills, and listening to facts, and checking my sources, and not just believing any old tripe from the Daily Express or whoever. So once I did get a more concrete realization of how big this would be, and that no, it would not blow over, and this is not swine flu 2009, I was able to adapt and learn and live with it. And from January to February, I adopted a cautious business-as-usual approach, as I wasn't really sure what was going to happen next. But what I could see, that other countries had started responding to their cases, and I was starting to get an idea of what could happen. And what was good about that is that I could prepare for it. The phrase social distancing started its entry into the mainstream worldwide lexicon, which didn't intimidate me too much, as keeping my distance with people was my preferred way of working, as long as other people complied. That gets a little bit muddy later on. Masks became much more common for the average person on the street, which at first I found that a little unsettling, but it was easy enough to get used to seeing, and it wasn't that much of an issue. Some countries were starting lockdowns, which was one of the biggest measures that I'd seen, and though I was concerned about what this would mean for my final year project at university, I kind of just accepted that what happens, happens. It wasn't going to be the end of the world if I had to change things in that regard. Due to the increase of cases in the UK, my university opted to suspend all scheduled classroom hours and instead insist the students work from home. And this was kind of more of a voluntary process. And this was an issue for me because my computer couldn't handle the software that I needed to complete the project that I was doing. In case you didn't know, I was studying computer character animation, and I was using four or more very technically demanding programs that would not have had a slither of a chance to work on my old computer. That being said, I could still go on campus and work on the project if I wanted to, as they hadn't closed the facilities. So I did, and I was able to go in, work on my own schedule, and there was a little upside to that, because I actually got quite a bit more work done over this period of around like 2 weeks, because I was able to just focus and do things in my own pace, and I really enjoyed that. Also, it was a lot quieter, which was a dream for me, because that meant I didn't have to deal with some of the more irritating people around. And keeping my distance was a lot easier than you'd think, because not many people, pretty easy job. This phase was a short one, and it ended up being one of my most productive periods this year, and it would not last. On the early afternoon of March 23rd, 2020, I was doing some work for my final year project at university. I'd actually accelerated my work schedule for the week prior so that I could prepare for a possible lockdown, but that Monday was the last day that I was able to go into university and work on my project. After I'd done the day's work, I headed over to the town centre for a quick look around, as I usually do. I'd grabbed some snacks, I looked around for some new makeup finds, don't think I really found anything that noteworthy, and then I went home. During that time in the town, I'd heard some rumblings of this lockdown being announced later that night. It was actually when I was going in the newsagents to get some American soda. The lady in the shop was pretty certain that there'd be a lockdown announced. And turns out she was right, because on that evening, you'll never guess, the lockdown was announced. It was official. People were urged to stay at home, all non-essential retail stores were closed, and school was officially out. My university closed its campus, and I now was unable to properly work on or even access my work. You know, the whole old computer can't handle the software thing. So, what did I do across this next few months? Well, you'll never guess. It's a real doozy, this one. But I stayed at home. I wasn't able to finish the work at home for reasons, so I requested a deferral and I had an extension granted for mid-August. And in the meantime, I waited. I did what I had to do for this country, and that was staying my pretty little ass at home. I wasn't an essential worker, I didn't do any necessary shopping, and I had no real reason to go anywhere, so I didn't. What I did instead was create a lot of the online content around that time, including palette designs and some video ideas. Some of them came to fruition, others did not. Either way, it was a time where I channeled a lot of my energy into non-academic creative endeavors, because that was one of the easiest things to do. And I want to make it clear that the boredom I might have experienced around this time was pretty normal, and it didn't really affect me strongly. Sure, it was a shame that I couldn't go back to uni in person, or do a little shopping trip, or go to a theme park for a holiday, but I wasn't going to play with my health, or my family's health. I just lived with what was happening, and that was that. So time passes, and later on within the lockdown, I began planning how I would deal with going back out once the lockdown was lifted and once uni was back open again. I thought that if I couldn't do the work now, I could at least prepare for the time that I could. I bought myself a reusable mask that I could wear. It's such a cool mask. It's the face of Blathers from Animal Crossing, and it's... I just love that mask so much. I got it from Redbubble, and I look cute as heck in it. I mean, if you're gonna wear a mask, you may as well wear a cute one. As long as it serves the function and it protects you, why not make it cute too? So that was that sorted, and I had that shift within around a month. It did take quite a while. So I kept track of the date for my deadline, and I kept note of how long I'd need to finish the project. And it was only really by July that I started to get properly concerned about meeting the new deferred deadline. I kept communicating with whoever I could from the uni to mixed results. My university was one of the best in the country for animation courses, but it was not one of the best in the country for communicating with its students effectively. I did get some word back eventually that there would be some limited reopenings, which made me very excited, because I could now finish my project at last. And once lockdown had been lifted, these sessions began. I made my way back outside to finish my final year project. Woohoo! Initially, I only went to these sessions that I'd book every few days, as I didn't want to jump headfirst into this new, unfamiliar world. So those first sessions really worked out well, because I was able to work on the project again. And because I'd had time away from my work, I could actually judge it differently and make some improvements. Hindsight was really the hidden gift I got from this pandemic, as, you know, trivial as that might be. Now, I only had 1 month to wrap up the whole project, but I was able to work at that more productive schedule that I'd established pre-lockdown, because I could kind of set my own schedule and I kind of work best like that, while not overexerting myself too much. by the last week, I was working on it every day, and I managed to get it all wrapped up and sent off on time. Now, not everything worked out perfectly, and there were some kinks that didn't get worked through as well as I wanted them to, but I was really proud of what I'd done. And honestly, that was enough for me. Being able to finish this project, the one I'd been waiting for throughout my time at uni, and doing it despite having the world flipped upside down, that's not too shabby of an achievement. Obviously, not everything would be about university, and my efforts would also have to extend to my existence in the outside world, which, even pre-lockdown, I wasn't amazing at. But, when I was ready, I started going to a shop every now and again. I wore my cute Blethers mask, I kept my distance from people, and I treaded carefully. Sometimes it would be after my uni sessions, where I'd nip to Budgens to grab a snack for home, or I'd walk round to the Tesco Express 2 minutes away from my house for the privilege of a Raspberry Pepsi Max. Once I felt confident with that, I was able to go to retail parks that I used to go to pre-pandemic, and even occasionally go to a shopping mall again, though not terribly often, all while keeping my distance, wearing my mask, and not being an irresponsible twat. Easy! Now, I'm the last person who'd applaud myself for dealing with this stuff, but I have to say that once I heard the prospect of going out again, I was definitely quite worried. I had no idea how things would look, how things would change, how I'd have to change the things I'd spent so much time learning to get right. It was a big deal for me. Being autistic, I'd always been pretty dependent on routines, and obviously a global pandemic is going to have some effects on people's routines, so I had to make sure I was prepared for it. And so far, I feel like my preparation had been successful. I'd been able to get back into the real world, safely and responsibly, without ever once having a major panic. And that sounds like a win to me, so I'm taking that as a win. But there was a little caveat to all of this, and one that I had seen coming. What I'd been preparing for was my own little adaptation to the new normal. The mask, the social distancing, all that jazz. That all went well. What I couldn't really prepare for was the thing that ended up making me the most irritated. And that was other people. Jean-Paul Sartre once said that hell is other people, and though he wasn't alive during the pandemic, I think that I can safely say the quote applies to a modern context, because, let me tell you, not everyone was doing the right thing. Surprise, surprise. And yeah, I know the world is not made up of 7 billion Ari Lennettes, and thank God for that, because it would be a train wreck. Every government cabinet would be having emotional crises, things would go a lot slower, and I don't think the economy would be amazing if I was in charge. However, one good thing that would happen in this world is that everyone would follow guidelines and keep the distance and wear a damn mask over the noses and the mouths like they're supposed to be. In the real world, you'll be flabbergasted to know that didn't happen. So it's infuriating enough just hearing about this stuff, like when people crowd on the beach during a national lockdown, which did happen, by the way. I had to see the stories of that. And throw house parties with no concern for people's health or distance or whatever. But it's even more piss-boiling when you're looking right at it, when you're seeing that in person. When you're seeing people take their masks off in stores as quickly as they come in, and blocking off exits and being way too far up your ass in the queue for the checkout, when you're living it, that's horrendous. And again, these little inconveniences are nothing compared to some of the horrors that people have experienced over this past year. But in a society where the only way to really control a virus without a vaccine is for everyone to play their part, it's pretty concerning when a lot of the people around you just don't care enough to do that. I feel so much sympathy towards the people who are working on the front lines, in the hospitals, in emergency services, in retail. Oh my goodness, retail workers are some of the unsung heroes of this country. They go through so much shit with customers because, let me tell you, customers are the devil. I've seen Karens in the wild. I've seen people ask for their manager in the wild. And as entertaining as that might be from a spectator's perspective, it's a lot less entertaining when you're seeing it in person and seeing it from the perspective of the workers, because it must be hell for them. That is why I'm always as kind as possible to these workers, whether it's in a shop or delivering the mail or operating a desk or wherever. Because these people get so little credit for having to deal with the inconsiderate bastards that don't want to play ball. And also, that little bit of friendly communication and camaraderie with the staff can be so nice to experience. Okay, I have an actual story. When I went to get some of the Rainbow High dolls from Smith's not too long ago, I had to deal with a whole bunch of people crowding together and blocking off the aisle so I couldn't safely get out, which did make me nervous, and I kind of had to think on the spot of what the hell am I going to do now? If you're wondering, the answer was grab another one of the dolls because I decided to get Ruby as well as Skylar, which I absolutely do not regret because they're both amazing. But once all of this kerfuffle was over and I went to the checkout, it was so nice to have a friendly face there to the point where it turned my mood from annoyed to pleasant because I just felt like so like warmly received by the person at the checkout. So the moral of the story is retail workers are great, customers are the devil, and we should really consider banning pushchairs. Okay, maybe that last one's an exaggeration, but I'm very pro papoose, so that's my bias coming in. The other moral of the story is that if you wear a mask and you keep your distance like you should, I won't judge you and I won't complain about you on Discord. There's an easy policy for you. So I feel like the complacency of some people after the first lockdown was one of the things that led to the second lockdown. I doubt it was the only reason. I felt like a second wave was kind of inevitable, but I think that a lot of people let their guard down and just assumed it was over, or didn't have their guard up in the first place because people went to the beach in the middle of a pandemic. And not just in the middle of a pandemic, but a lockdown. Yeah, some people just did not give a shit. But by November, the country was put back into lockdown because cases had gone up again. And I will explain a little bit more about why I think that happened. So I think that national lockdowns are often the right solution to these problems, as I think often you do need to control the outbreak, and you can't just cheer people onto doing the right thing. Because, as sad as it is to say, you can't generally trust a lot of people to just use the common sense and make the right choices, which I will also explain a little bit later on. The sadness of life. No one makes the right decisions. And this is where I go on to my next section. And this section is going to be the political section. This is going to be all about my issues with how the UK government has been handling this pandemic and just the general effect of their methods on the country. So, if you listen to my first ever episode of this podcast, you'll probably be aware that I will take any opportunity to shit on the Tories. And darling, this episode is no different. In fact, this episode is both more appropriate of an occasion for me to call this out, and actually more specific in terms of the things that I am calling out. I could go on some more standard tirade about the Tories being selfish and not really giving a shit about poor people, yada yada yada. I do that frequently in my head. But in this episode, I have actual specific reasons to call them out. Like, I'm on the moral high ground here. So let's go down the list, shall we? First of all, the first lockdown, I think, was a great idea, but I don't think it was enacted quickly enough. I feel like there was this good week or two of limbo beforehand, and people were kind of like, oh, are we going to do it? Is this going to happen? Is there going to be the announcement? Is it going to be official? Are the cogs turning? And I think the fact that enough people were thinking that and saying that is enough to indicate that it probably should have happened earlier. Like, even me, like, even with my final year project, I'd have gladly gone into a lockdown a week early if that meant we got like an extra 2 weeks off at the end of lockdown, which could have happened. It just feels like the government were a bit sluggish with their response. And no, I'm not a cabinet member, and I don't have a full map of how everything works, aside from, like, I don't know, 1 year studying government and politics in college, which was very useful, but it still doesn't make me, like, a pro at this stuff. But you'd think a global pandemic would be a high priority and a fair reason for putting other issues on the back burner, even just for now, because like global pandemic presumably takes priority. But no, we got a lockdown and it lasted about 3 to 4 months. And the reason I'm being vague with that description is because this is leading into my next point. So, next point is May 2020. The government decided that it would be a great idea to change the stay-at-home slogan that they were using since the lockdown started to stay alert. I'm assuming that the Tosser-in-Chief had some explanation for this, but I think this was a terrible idea. May 2020 was not the end of the first lockdown. It was, like, near enough the halfway point. So why the hell the message changed from the very clear and informative stay at home, which kind of explains itself, to the incredibly vague stay alert, whatever that means, the reasons escape me. I get that around this time they were introducing the COVID alert levels, which I think are good and great for introducing those, but those could have been introduced without lessening the message of their existing slogan, which, like, the stay at home slogan, I'm pretty sure that still is an important thing you need to do, because just for context, in mid-2020, the UK had the highest COVID death toll in Europe and the second highest COVID death toll in the world. So let's just say now isn't a great time to make your messages unclear. And even the devolved governments of Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland were like, no, we're not doing that. We're not changing it. And they decided to keep the stay at home slogan for that exact reason, that it's a vague slogan that sends mixed messages to the people. The people who can barely make good decisions as it is, let's face it. Like, what good is it telling a bunch of people to stay alert when a lot of them just won't care? A lot of them will just take the end of the stay-at-home message as, like, a back-to-normal message. It's just kind of a ridiculous decision to make. I will say, this country has made some good decisions, and some of the decisions they think were good were the regulations around wearing masks, and there was two of them. Number one is all about wearing masks on public transport, which you now have to do unless you have valid exemption. And the second one is the exact same thing. You have to wear a mask unless you have valid exemption in shops. And both of these regulations get a thumbs up from me. I am very pro wearing a mask to protect the people around you. I think it's very important. And it's like a sign of respect to the people around you. Like, I'm willing to have a little bit of discomfort and irritation and getting my glasses steamed up if that means protecting public health and the NHS. But my problem is that the second regulation was put in place very late on. It was in late July. Good on them for having done it in the first place, but I would have had it done, like, at the least around the time they put out that stay alert slogan. And that was in early May. Like, if you're gonna act like, oh, maybe staying at home isn't the biggest priority, maybe going outside isn't that bad, then at least make the mask thing a high priority thing. Like, at the very least, to protect retail workers. I'll say it again, retail workers, you deserve so much better. Now, we need to talk about a problem that really set the stage for the second spike in cases and the second lockdown also. That was a little initiative called Eat Out to Help Out. This was a scheme where the government would invest money so that restaurants could have half-price meals. This would encourage people to go out and support businesses who were struggling during the pandemic. And, like, that on paper is great, because it means that businesses get that little boost and customers get that little deal, and, like, half-price food, I'm not necessarily going to complain a great deal about that. But the thing is that with this whole scheme, not just the execution, but the theory, it's just flawed. If restaurants are open, people are going to go. Some people just don't give a shit, and if there's an opportunity to get Pizza Express, some people are just going to take it. Slashing the prices of restaurant meals and promoting it as a scheme is only going to encourage more crowds and more chance of transmission and spreading the virus. It's going to be like a pressure point where everyone's like, oh, we need to go out for food now while it's half price, which is just so unnecessary, and it encourages impulse spending, which brings the demand up and brings the crowd up. And even though restaurants will try and keep things safe and socially distanced, a lot of people just don't care. And some of you are going to be like, well, that can't be a reason for the second spike. And I hate to tell you, but studies have shown that this was a part of the second spike. The University of Warwick put out some pretty telling data, like cases spiking after a week of the scheme. In some ways, I realized the intention was positive in helping businesses in a struggling economy, because let's face it, the economy is hella struggling. But it was like, it reminded me of that one scene in Chicken Run where the farmer puts out an absolute shit ton of bird feed in the trough and all of the chickens run to it and feast on it. But they don't know it's to fatten them up, ready for the chop. It's like that. I know that's a dramatic comparison, but in my mind, that works. Or, different parallel if you haven't seen Chicken Run, the Pleasure Island scene in Pinocchio. It's like that too. And all this time, people still couldn't visit their grandparents, but they could get half-price Wagamama, and for what? It was just not really that good of a scheme. And one of the worst things about the second spike is that young people were blamed for it. Young people were told that it was their fault for causing tighter restrictions. And while some of them were probably to blame, I don't think they bear the brunt of the responsibility. The amount of older people who just do not give a shit about protecting others and keeping their distance is just staggering. And I think a lot of that is swept under the rug. But I also think that the whole scheme itself was a contributor. Like, the government basically telling people to go out and have food outside and do all of that. Like, the government definitely bears responsibility in that too. It's not just a people issue. Y'all made your bed, and now that people are sleeping in it and for spreading the virus around, yeah, that's your problem, hun. So let's talk about the tier system. And there are two tier systems that have been in place so far for the UK. The first tier system was announced in October, and it made not a damn bit of sense. There was tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. And I couldn't tell you a single difference between them, because honestly, it felt like there was no urgency and no real substance to the tier system, and as a result, people just didn't care. So in November, we went back into lockdown. Surprise, surprise. I think one of the big reasons behind this was complacency of people, but I don't think that's the only reason. I think a lot of people were trying their best to do things right and just had no idea what to do because, again, unclear, vague, mixed messages from the government. If you're going to have a tier system, make it damn clear what each one means. And this is a lesson that they have seemed to learn from, because from December 2nd, when the second lockdown ended, they enacted a stricter tier system that actually made sense. So, here is a very basic explanation of the tier system. Tier 1, a drink at the pub. Tier 2, a drink at the pub, but you can only have it with a substantial meal. Tier 3, no drink at the pub. There you go. That's an explanation that anyone in the UK can understand, which is such an important thing to ensure, because if your messages are unclear, plenty of people in this country just won't listen. My area is currently in Tier 3, which is the strictest tier, and honestly, I'm much more assured about what I can and can't do this time around. It feels like an actual alert protocol which people can understand. And now for my final critique of the government, and this is a more general critique that's a bit less time specific, because it's been a recurring message from them that I think is asinine. And the message of many people in the government, including the people at the top, has been, use your common sense. I'm going to break down to you why that is the worst thing you can say to a bunch of people. The reason is that many people in this country don't have common sense. People during the first lockdown, when people were told to stay at home, were going to the beach. The beach. And this is in the UK, so it's not like going to the beach is this amazing, luxurious experience like you're on holiday. It's cold, it's dirty, and it's not that exciting. Like, you're going to risk your public health and the health of everyone else around you for a pebble beach and a cornet. Couldn't be me. I have common sense and I follow the rules. Some people have neither of those things, and the fact that the government has this much faith in the people to do the right thing, it's rather naive. You need rules. You need clear guidelines. You can't expect people to just be good. That's not how society works. If the world was full of people who, completely out of their own volition, chose to be responsible, the pandemic would probably be quite a bit smaller than it is now. It might not have even reached that label of pandemic. It might just have stayed as an epidemic. But no, people go to the beach during lockdowns, they throw house parties, they do whatever the hell they please. And if they don't even know what the rules are that they're supposed to be following, the chances of them ignoring the regulations are going to be much higher. So no, use your common sense is not a good instruction. Okay, so that's the last time I'm going to talk about the government, I promise. Now we're going to talk about celebrities and influencers, because let's face it, that's what you're all here for. So let's get into this shit. First of all, the parties. Influencers and celebrities, which I'm counting as separate categories because I'm a child of reality TV and real celebrities. Both of these groups attending house parties with 50 plus people. No masks, no social distancing. Do you have worms in your brain? Do you have worms in your brain? It's a legitimate question. I'm being serious here. Do you have any wrinkles in your brain, or is it just a raw chicken fillet? Please let me know. Let's name and shame, shall we? Kim Kardashian, Rita Ora, James Charles, Culture Vulture Nikita Dragon, Lipstick Nick, Jake Paul, The Hype House, and Tana Mojo. Are we surprised? Are we really surprised at this point? And then a bunch of random TikTok stars who I wouldn't know if they hit me in the face. But are we really surprised? Honestly, this is the kind of stuff that encourages people to not care about public safety in the pandemic. I don't want to be like the think of the children person, but in this case, I think it's necessary. In a global pandemic, throwing house parties for social media clicks is not only unnecessary, but it's dangerous. That's spreading the virus to a whole bunch of people, which is not just a theory, because there's been proof that it did spread the virus to a whole bunch of people. There were positive results there. Plenty. And that's causing more people to spread the virus to vulnerable people who then die. And for what? A damn party. Literally worms in the brain. That is all I have to say on that. But I don't think the only problem has been the parties. I think that people are focusing a lot on that, but they aren't focusing as much on the misinformation. And that's also just been so damaging and just one of those things that could easily be the death of all my faith in humanity if it weren't for people being brave enough to call it out. So let's start the reading, shall we? Michelle Phan. Essential oils do not prevent the coronavirus. First of all, promoting MLMs and essential oils is skeevy as it is. But fear-mongering and using the coronavirus, which has taken millions of lives, millions, to sell essential oils, is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Next caller, Jake Paul talking a whole bunch of shite. Are we surprised? Of course not. This is just an average Tuesday. Jake Paul claimed the virus was a hoax. Worms in the brain. Worms. Millions of lives, but it's a hoax. People not being able to say goodbye to their dying family members, but it's a hoax. People still living with long-term effects after contracting and beating COVID, but it's a hoax. Are you being contrarian or edgy, or are you just that ignorant? Make it make sense quickly. And then we go over to Kat Von Dipshit, spreading even more trash across the internet. Like, oh, people are sheep. We need to wake up. Shut up. Whole bunch of people sharing conspiracy theories on the socials. Trend Mood, Carly Bible, Jessica Harlow is apparently still a thing. All sharing that QAnon bullshit to their audiences of thousands. You want to act like this is all a hoax, huh? You want to act like people are just sheeple and this virus isn't a big deal, huh? How about you put that to the test, maybe? Go on the front lines. Go work in the hospitals. Go see firsthand the horrors that are going on worldwide. Go and see people struggling to breathe, not being able to see their family members before they die. Go see medical workers having to deal with the stress of handling all of this with an underfunded system led by people who do not care, and then come and tell me why it's a hoax. I dare you. I double fucking dare you to say that to my face. And that is why I don't entertain any of that conspiracy shit. Because it's insulting. It's insulting to all the people on the front line, all of the medical workers and family members of people who have died and who have suffered, and first responders, and every single key worker who has worked the hardest to keep you safe. So if you're going to post harmful conspiracy theories on your accounts, well, I can't stop you, can I? I don't have that power. But I have a suggestion. I suggest that the thing you do straight afterwards is delete your account, because you do not deserve a platform. All right, I need a moment to breathe before I move on to the final section of this episode, which is a little bit more of an optimistic take. So recently, there's been a breakthrough with the approval of one of the COVID vaccines for use in the UK. It's the one made by Pfizer, and it's already started arriving in the UK, ready to be distributed and launched, with the first people getting theirs earlier this week, as of the time of recording. I think this is a great thing, and I personally wouldn't hesitate to take it in order to protect myself, my family, the people around me, because that's just the kind of person I am. I know some people are skeptical, and well, some of you have some points, but not all of you. Some of you are just some scaremongering assholes. But I've had far more things to reassure me about the vaccine than to put me off it. So that's my perspective. It's going to be distributed in phases, and I believe the first one has been going to care homes and their workers, which is great. Obviously, this whole process is going to take some time, particularly as the vaccine requires two doses to be effective. but I think it's a good start and a reassuring sign for the future. And I think it's so easy to be pessimistic about things, especially from my perspective, eternal cynic, because the government has made so many bad decisions and the year 2020 has just kept giving and giving when it comes to just hitting the world with pure concentrated shite. But I like to think that ever since Wendy Williams did The Masked Singer, the world has been getting slightly better. Ever so slightly, just a smidge. Biden won the election. We got successful vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, and I believe a few others. And we got Dua Lipa's Studio 2054. Bit more trivial, but, you know, positives. And I'm going to take those positives, and let that be a reason for me to go to sleep on a night slightly less worried about the world. Because 2020 has been straight up horrifying with the pandemic and the election stress and the feeling completely unfulfilled during quarantine. So it's a relief to finally have a moment of relief and hope. I think people need that. Of course, be cautious and don't stop listening and working. Beating a global pandemic is not a sprint. I don't even think it's a marathon. I'd say it's more like the final race in the film Cars. You have so many laps ahead of you, so many obstacles that could pop up. Sometimes things will just crash right in front of you, and you can never be complacent because your tires might burst any second. But there is an end in sight, and we just have to keep going towards it and working towards it. And that means keeping your distance, wearing a mask, listening and learning from the right sources, and caring about the safety of the people around you. And if we can all at least try and do that, maybe that slither of hope's going to be worth something. So that was my episode about the pandemic. I know it was a heavy episode, but I think that just goes with the territory of any conversation around COVID. I hope that at least it opened your eyes to some of the things I've been seeing over the past year. And as always, I like to start conversations with what I'm talking about, so I'd really appreciate your input on this. One good thing about this episode is that at least it's not ridiculously niche like some of my other episodes. This is something I think we all have some experiences with. And if you want to keep up with my podcast, you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, though sometimes I've been missing episodes, which is, well, good old seasonal depression. It's the most wonderful time of the year, you know? But if you enjoyed this episode, you could leave a review depending on the platform, or you can share this episode or the podcast to your socials. And my socials are in the description, as always. Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and the podcast's home on Anchor. So go and give them some love. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really appreciate it, especially considering the subject matter. And I can pretty confidently promise that the next episode will be less heavy. It's not like I can get much heavier than a global pandemic. But either way, thank you for listening. And until next time, keep trying your best, everyone. Bye for now.